He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
The call of humpback whales as they swim up the east coast of the South Island. That's a recording that's part of research by scientist Deanna Clement of Nelson's Cawthron Institute.
They start migrating about now, and they go probably till the end of September, and they travel up north. Like we all should, they go to the islands for a lovely winter where it's warm and lovely, and then they calve and breed, and then they come back down in the spring. But mainly they're close to the shores in the winter one coming up. And so we did two winters of migrations. The males are the ones that make most calls, and they're the ones that sing more. They don't always sing when they're migrating, but when they do, you know, it's that lovely, haunting.
Deanna studies marine mammal behaviour a long way from where she grew up, an ocean away actually.
So I'm from right in the middle of America, the Midwest, the farming belt.
Landlocked.
Landlocked. No mountains, no ocean, lots of lakes. And they all made fun of me when in high school I said, I want to be a marine biologist. And they went, we don't even know what the ocean's like. How are you going to? But I had an aunt who lived in the Bahamas. And we had gone to visit her when I was much younger and just thought it was the most amazing thing ever, you know, to be able to go in the ocean and the salt and all these fish and stuff. So when I graduated high school, my mom said, okay, if you're serious about this, you know, go visit your aunt, see if you can scuba dive, you know, see if you really like it, get scuba dive trained, and then see, we'll see from there. And we went in, and I just remember sitting on the bottom doing this dive training, and I was the only one with the dive instructor, so I was really lucky at the time. Him going off to check something, me just sitting, he's like, sit on the bottom cross-legged and just chill out there for a bit, you know, and I'm just floating and all these amazing things going by me, and I just thought, yeah, I can do this.
Many years later, after that tropical dream of diving in the Bahamas, Deanna found herself in Otago for a PhD in marine science.
Dunedin Knight students seem to relish and have competitions of how cold their flats can be, you know, and how many clothes they wear. And I just, that wasn't, you know, coming from Florida, that wasn't me. And being slightly an older student, I was like, oh, I don't think I can do this.
She stuck at it, though. And her research today looks at marine mammal habitat and how coastal development affects marine mammals.
I always had been intrigued by behavior, animal behavior. So I started in behavior. And then, yeah, quickly evolved into many other things and now even acoustics.
Acoustics, how did that happen?
I think it's just how technology has gone as well. Like when I arrived in New Zealand, they were just starting to spread into all the coastal populations, you know, animals that you could easily get to. We still do it and it's still amazing and it's still the best way to understand an animal. But I'd say like the David Attenborough naturalist way, you sit and listen and watch. You know, and you'd spend lots of time with your animals, lots of time with your population. I mean, we even use those terms, my population, my animals, because you're there for 3-4 years every day that you can, being on the water, writing down behavioral, writing down where they are, writing down numbers. That's very time consuming, very cost heavy. And sometimes it's just hard to do because of weather and other things, and you can't get information. So our view of these populations becomes very, like we feel like we know them, but we know them in really good weather, when they're on the surface, when they're close by, and when we can get information from them. So we're learning about like 10% of their time. Acoustics lets us get into their world.
So what is this? How does it work and what's it made of?
Well, this is a cylinder, a metal cylinder that is pressure proof. And this is really just storage. So this is the cylinder so that we can put it down to great depths and it won't collapse on us. It's got tape and anti-fouling on it, basically, that makes it that color and that texture. And this is mainly just the storage unit. And this is the hydrophone, and a very dirty one.
So this is, that's what's basically recording everything.
Yeah, so this is the microphone. This is all of this in here. It's called passive underwater acoustics. Basically, we put it down for 3 months, 4 months. It's like these can go up to probably 6 months, depending on how often you're doing it.
That's a lot of data.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the difference. This is now the actual sounds of everything in the ocean. Where in the past, we used to program selectively to say we want to get a certain frequency. So any time we wanted to hear Hector's dolphin, who's super high frequency, we just set it for those. It's listening, but it only records data when it hears those frequencies. But now these sound traps record everything. Mm-hmm. So for the first time, we're able to go, okay, well, here's not only where the dolphin's present, but here's everything the dolphin's hearing as well.
To give you a sense of what that underwater world sounds like, those are the whistles and calls of bottlenose dolphins. And that's a container ship passing by.
Some of our recent projects are, there's a lot of port development going on. And dolphins are most sensitive to really high intensity, loud noises along those things, because it can actually damage their hearing, damage physically. And like when we go to a concert, and you get that ringing in your ears, they can have the same effect. So, and that's some of the sounds made out there that can actually do that. So these help us now not only find where they are and monitor them, but now we can hear the level of sounds that they're receiving.
That's how piling sounds underwater when ports are being constructed and piles are being hammered into the seabed. Pretty sharp and loud, and one of the main human-made noises that can permanently or temporarily injure marine mammal hearing.
Having that information, in the past it was great just to get the dolphin information. When are they there? How often are they there? How often are they vocalizing? Because that's kind of the trick with these, is they can be there maybe not vocalizing or not close enough, so you wouldn't necessarily get them.
Yeah.
But now we can get that information and go, okay, with these port projects, you know, they're doing these sorts of developments. Here's the level of sounds they're making. You know, are we noticing a correlation in terms of, with more sound, are we getting fewer dolphins or dolphin vocalizations? So we're using them almost as a impact monitoring now, and not just Hector's, but other dolphins as well, or even whales sometimes. And there's so much sound. You know, we've gone from being data poor to now being overloaded.
The implications of this sort of research are really far-reaching. From conservation to tourism to helping open water aquaculture farms avoid accidents involving the animals while they migrate or forage, ending up entangled sometimes.
An entangled animal is ripping a hole in their net, and it's letting their stock out, or it's damaging their stock. And so there's that incentive. But then there's also, that's the big one. But there's also that, you know, if we can avoid them, we want to avoid them. Is there a pathway? Is there a certain area that the whales come into and then they all travel up together? Or are they spread out? Or are they coming right near the shore? And if we could nail it down, you know, can we then avoid it and put the farms over here or over there if they're coming in? So we use these. We had them out for the two main humpback migration seasons, but then you also want technologies that can prevent the entanglement, prevent the interaction if possible. And so we're trying to collect that information now. That's the next step. And I think it's recognized worldwide, and everybody's kind of at the same level going, you know, we know they entangle, but we want more information on why, how.
So you're at a stage where right now you're sort of analyzing all of this data that was collected pre-lockdown.
Yeah, yeah. And looking at, you know, is it a good technique? Is this how we want to be able to study these? Did we get good enough data to be able to use this to do what we want? And the one thing we found is we found a lot more humpbacks than we thought, but also a lot more blue whales were there all of a sudden. So we had all these blue whale calls, and they were going, what's this, you know? So blues are incredibly low, and they sound just like a drum in the background kind of a thing. So you can see it on the screen. There it is. So you can see the... That's why they often use visual audiograms to identify the calls more than the sound waves themselves, or like a certain frequency, because they're quite distinct, and people are still at this point better at picking them up than the technology. So they'll often manually check when they've gone through and looked.
This summer, Deanna and her team plan to trial their latest remote sensing tool for studying marine mammals. They're digital recording tags to work with fisheries and the Department of Conservation to monitor our endangered Maui and Hector dolphins.
I feel like New Zealand's really at the front of this. We're the one country that's starting to put in place those sorts of things that we can collect that data and it can be used for. And they come to us quite a bit coming back and saying, so what's happening with this? What's happening with that? So I feel like we're a world leader in that instance. We have a lot to learn, and the world has a lot to learn from us. And I especially saw it with the Hectors because, you know, they're such an iconic species. You know, they're the kiwi in the ocean, and the government's really responded to any sort of advice that the scientists give. And because we are a small country, I find, you know, the handful of marine mammal scientists, we work really well together, and we usually give quite a unified voice for things. Where in the States, you have lots of competition between everyone trying to be heard and be the one. Where here, I feel like it's the dolphins that we're trying to help. I mean, it's never perfect. We, as scientists, we always want more data, more time, more money to study. But I feel like, you know, in the time I've been here, there's been really good change and a lot has happened in the species. You know, I feel quite positive about the species at the moment compared to what it felt like when I first came here. And then the fact now that the States is coming back and saying these things and wanting advice for aquaculture and that stuff is kind of like, huh, roundabout way of getting there.
Deanna Clement, marine ecologist originally from Missouri and now based in Nelson. She's based at the Cawthron Institute, which is celebrating its centenary this year. The results of the research done by Deanna and her peers is expected out in the coming months. And here's more of those haunting humpback whale calls. Just incredible. Thanks for listening to Voices. I'm your host and producer, Kadambri Raghukumar. Follow our podcast on all your favourite apps and find other RNZ podcasts and our science podcast too, Our Changing World, on our website. Today's episode was mixed by Jeremy Ansell, and I'm Kadambri Raghukumar.